Robert Annecy lived in the north side of Williamsburg, Brooklyn for 14 years and witnessed its transformation from a gritty industrial neighborhood to an artist community and hipster haven, and finally to what he calls a bohemian theme park given over to real estate developers building luxury high-rises. In the last Bohemia Scenes from the Life of Williamsburg, he not only talks about those dramatic changes, but of the future of cities in general. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Drew, and I'm very pleased it has brought Robert Annecy to our show today. Hello.
Thanks for having me on the show, Len.
Of course, we have to question that title, Last Bohemia. Are you saying that this is the end of Bohemias in New York and in the world? What about Greenpoint, Bushwick, and Brooklyn, Long Island City, and Queens, Lower East Side, Manhattan? Haven't they been developing as the next Bohemias?
Well, I think what's changed is that, you know, the idea of Bohemia has become so incorporated into how cities develop neighborhoods that a Bohemia, which depends on a kind of isolation to build a community, really can't exist anymore. And Williamsburg was one of the last places where you could just go there and no one knew you were there and no one knew what you were doing.
But the same sort of thing happened earlier in Soho and then in Tribeca. They went quickly from places where people looking for large spaces and low rents were settled in, and the next thing you knew, they were all being pushed out by real estate developers. People from Wall Street wanted the fancy lofts instead. So isn't this just part of the normal cycle?
I don't think it's part of the normal cycle. I think it's – I mean, neighborhoods like Soho, neighborhoods like the Lower East Side existed as bohemias for extended periods of time. I mean, the Lower East Side, artists were living down there for 40 years, 50 years, and you had, you know, clubs on the Lower East Side, you had the loft scene in jazz. I mean, there was this historical epic. The same thing with Greenwich Village. It was a bohemia for almost 100 years. Now, it's Bushwick's already discovered. I mean, Tavern in the Green is doing $160 plate event in Bushwick. So I think there's a real change in how these bohemias are picked up by developers, by the larger community.
Well, hasn't the housing bubble burst put an end to much of the new development in Williamsburg and other places?
I think New York City is more immune from the bubble bursting than a lot of other places. I mean, property values really haven't gone down, and they're projecting they're going to put in 5,000 new luxury condo units in Greenpoint in the next 5 years. So,
where did you grow up?
Providence, Rhode Island.
So, small town. Well, not
totally that small. Don't tell them that.
No, it's a city. But you came to New York.
I came to New York like, you know, a lot of kids. I mean, you know, I went to Catholic boys' school, hated it, wanted to be a writer. Of course, New York was the place where I came.
And Williamsburg, because the rents were cheap at that time?
Yeah, I couldn't afford to live in the East Village.
What was it like when you arrived in 1994?
It was quiet, empty, desolate, but also kind of marvelous. I mean, the waterfront was filled with abandoned factories and warehouses, and, you know, people had the freedom to kind of take risks there that, you know, are becoming increasingly hard to find in New York.
Well, they were really, and we're talking about North Williamsburg in this case. We'll deal with the South for a moment later. But North Williamsburg is really two separate kinds of areas. There are all of those old manufacturing places,
right,
many of them abandoned now. And then there's that vinyl-sided North Williamsburg, these one-family houses that do not have the same kind of appeal that Brooklyn Heights might have. So
right.
What made these two places and a very ethnic neighborhood in many cases so appealing to artists in the 70s and 80s?
Well, because there was space there. I mean, it's not like Park Slope or Brooklyn Heights where there was good housing stock and kind of a consistent tradition of middle-class people living there, that, you know, those neighborhoods were protected in a way. On the north side, which had been Irish and Italian and Polish to a certain extent, they wouldn't rent their buildings to, you know, Puerto Ricans and Dominicans from the south side. But they were happy when the young artists started coming in and they said, oh, we'll let these people into our neighborhood. But up until those point, a lot of apartments had been empty. And then you had the warehouses, which were emptying out and provided, you know, loft spaces.
Now, the streets actually are called North First, North Second, South First, South Second. Is that the dividing line between North and South?
I mean, it's blurry. But the further south you go, you know, once you get over Grand Street, it starts to become more Puerto Rican and Dominican. And then further south, it becomes Hasidic.
For a long time, Williamsburg was a neighborhood of new immigrants. And they were, on the north side, Poles and Italians and Irish people, and then the Hasidim and the Puerto Ricans in the south. How did those populations interact with each other?
Well, you know, definitely there was a lot of racism there. I mean, you look at McCarran Park. McCarran Park Pool was originally closed in 1984 because the fathers of the North Side didn't want Dominicans and Puerto Ricans using their pool. And now, you know,
they deny that. You know that.
But we know better. And now, 28 years later, you're getting the same kind of conflicts there. All of these people moving into the neighborhood, living in these luxury condos, are like, we don't want, you know, brown teenagers fighting in our pool.
But they just reopened McCarran Pool, and it was it made newspaper headlines because there was tension. I haven't heard of any problem since.
There's been a few incidents, but, I mean, at every public pool in every city in the United States, there's problems. The reason it got in the news is because it happened in Williamsburg.
But McCarran Pool is also interesting in another way. It was a place where kids from all over Williamsburg came to enjoy a day in a public pool. It's a huge pool. And then it was closed, supposedly for repairs. And at a certain point, years later, it became a popular venue for hipster concerts. And then more recently, it's back to being a pool. That, to some degree, also describes the changes in the neighborhood, doesn't it?
Sure. Well, we're coming to a point with not just with Williamsburg. I mean, I think Williamsburg is a test case, but with New York City as a whole, we're starting to, you know, the question we have to ask is, who is the city for? I mean, and increasingly, Manhattan is a city for the wealthy. It's a city for the 1%. It's turning into a gated community. In Brooklyn, there's still options to, you know, build lower-income housing, build middle-income housing. But instead, you know, the emphasis on someone like Bloomberg is getting the wealthy in there. And, you know, while trickle-down is a failed ideology in every level, yet that's still being promoted. I mean, you know, it's like people like Bloomberg think the only future for the rest of us is to be, you know, servants in their compound. And I don't think that's what New York is supposed to be.
Well, there is a stretch along the Brooklyn, the Williamsburg waterfront, which looks kind of like Miami Beach. But right alongside it is a great flea market and a source of some of the best food you can get. So I'm not sure that one doesn't feed the other.
I mean, could you have those things without the luxury condos? I mean, try finding a place in Williamsburg. I mean, it's not just Williamsburg either. I mean, try being a kid moving to New York City and wanting to make art at and be able to get by. I mean, I don't know what you pay your interns here, but I bet it's not a lot more than they were getting paid 20 years ago. So the only people who can afford to get into these arts communities, arts organizations, or people who already have money. And it's a very different New York than we had 25, 30 years ago.
My guest is Robert Annasi, A-N-A-S-I. His book, The Last Bohemia, Scenes from the Life of Williamsburg, Brooklyn. When I was a kid growing up in Williamsburg, the two things that dominated the waterfront were Domino Sugar Refinery and the Schaefer Beer plant. Did they play a role in the economy of the area?
I'm sure that they employed thousands of people. I mean, and as soon as, you know, Domino's Sugar stayed open, I think, until, 2004, 2006, but it was working with a skeleton crew. You know, and as those industrial jobs went away, people either moved out, or if they couldn't afford to move out, they were just trapped.
Until Budweiser did it in, Schaefer was the most popular beer in America for much of the 20th century. Now its plant has been converted into luxury housing, and there's been a battle over whether the Domino site should be developed for housing as well.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. There's a lot of other things that could be done with the – I mean, why not turn it into lower-income and middle-income housing?
When did drugs become a major problem in the area?
I believe in the 60s is when heroin became a problem, specifically on the South Side. I mean, you read about, you know, I've read some oral histories from that era, and, you know, these Puerto Rican guys moving in are like, yeah, you know, the Jews who were living there were so naive, they didn't even know we were selling heroin. And but we couldn't get into the, you know, they wouldn't let us move into the north, you know, the Italians wouldn't let us move into the north side because they were more suspicious.
You write about Cokie's, an aptly named bar where cocaine was sold openly and snorted in special booths.
Yes, Cokie's was, like, you know, the Bella Union saloon of, like, the kind of urban Wild West that was Williamsburg.
And a friend who had a loft near the bridge says that she was afraid to go out at night because she would often hear gunshots. Now that neighborhood is, as we mentioned earlier, where a lot of the high-rises have gone up.
Right. I mean,
so this is another case of gentrification, isn't it?
Certainly it's gentrification.
And aren't we – isn't it good that we're rid of some of these people who you write about? Magda, who became homeless because of drugs. Napoleon with Marcin, who – seem to be almost proud of getting so many young people addicted to heroin.
I mean, it's good in the sense that, you know, everyone deserves safety where they live, but who's living there? I mean, are the working class, you know, Williamsburg is still a very poor working class neighborhood once you get away from the waterfront, once you get away from the north side. So who's really benefiting from the changes? I mean, is it just a two-tier society? You know, a few years ago, I did a panel on A.J. Liebling with your brother, actually. And he turned to me and he said, you know, Robert, whatever happened to the man on the street? And what he meant was, you know, our society, our culture isn't interested in the lives of working people anymore. Their narratives are being completely left out. And I'm not interested in rich people or where they go or what they eat or their expensive restaurants. You know, I'm interested in regular New Yorkers and I'm interested in making a place for them.
So how have those longtime residents in Williamsburg been affected by the transformation?
Well, if they have, you know, if they're lucky enough to be in rent stabilized houses, and very often the landlords are doing everything they can to get them out of there, then they're fairly safe. If they're landlords, then they did really well. But a lot of people were just driven out. So I don't know. I don't see how those people benefited from the changes in the neighborhood.
You wound up going to UC Irvine for a PhD in literary journalism, and you've said your experiences in Williamsburg meshed with theoretical work on cities that your professors were doing. So is this something that we're seeing around the country?
You're seeing it around the world. I mean, every mayor in every city in the United States with a decaying urban center says, let me get some artists in here, and that's going to raise property values. And then when, you know, they've raised the values, it's time to kick them to the curb. And I think young artists should be aware that they're being used in this way.
Do you see any upsides to the changes?
There's more ATMs in Williamsburg now than when I lived there.
That's it?
Better restaurants.
Well, Williamsburg has become, like so many other neighborhoods where the rents were low, has become a magnet for people who want to do something a little different. The chefs who felt that they just couldn't afford to open a place in Manhattan go to Williamsburg and become – and now some of them have become famous and they're opening restaurants in Manhattan as kind of satellite restaurants.
Well, I don't think – you know, the accoutrements of an artistic lifestyle are not what it means to be an artist. I mean, I think – in this country, we're obsessed with, you know, lifestyle rather than having a life. I mean, being an artist isn't about having, like, being able to eat at expensive or you know, classy or experimental restaurants. It's about the work you do and the choices you make with your life.
Do you think there is a way for neighborhoods to become more livable? Because Williamsburg was a tough place to live in the old days, without completely displacing and changing the quality of the community?
Yeah, I think, you know, community activism is a good way to go. I think people being self-aware of what's going on is a good way to go. I mean, and also, you know, the political community realizing that the people who are in the neighborhoods already do a lot to benefit them, and getting rid of them is just going to turn them, you know, turn places like Williamsburg into, you know, sterile landscapes like Miami Beach, like the waterfront is now.
There was an article in the New York Times about a month ago about tensions developing in Greenpoint, right past the border, in fact, right past McCarran Park, where local Polish people were upset that the restaurants are opening for brunch on Sunday morning, a time when their businesses are closed when they're going to church. And they're offended by all the hipsters who are lounging out on the street.
Well, I mean, I mean, what can you say? I like a good brunch on Sunday morning. So, and I haven't been a practicing Catholic for 30 years. So.
You end the book with an anecdote about a police officer writing you a ticket for an open container. This is more recently.
This is a couple of years ago. I think there might still be an outstanding bench warrant for me.
What happened? And how is it different from what might have happened in the old days?
Well, I walked into a park after closing, and I walked like 20 yards into the park, and two cops rushed up on me, guns drawn, and frisked me, patted me down, and gave me a ticket. And I said, "Why are you guys giving me a ticket?" And they said, "The park is closed." Before, in the old days, you didn't see a cop in Williamsburg. And now they're handing out tickets for walking around at night.
A caller says rent stabilization only applied to big homes, not to older two-dwelling homes. And newbies were more willing to pay more dollars. This is more the issue than racism among Poles and Russians.
Well, certainly my landlady, who was Polish, was happy to have me move into the building because, I said, "Why don't you rent to Polish people?" And she said, "Oh, Polish, too much drink." But the real reason she didn't want to rent to Poles is because they wouldn't pay as much as I did. And then after I'd been there for 12 years, she took me to court to try to get me out because I wasn't paying enough.
Robert Annecy is the author of The Gloves, A Boxing Chronicle. He teaches literary journalism at the University of California, Irvine, where he is a Schaefer and Chancellor's Club Fellow. His book, The Last Bohemia, Scenes from the Life of Williamsburg, Brooklyn, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you, sir.